Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 163rd episode of the Mod State Podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm probably going to be doing better than your wife when she gets home. We're still we've dragged this out. Whichever. It's late for both of us relatively, and I do apologize in advance for the tardiness on my part.
Oh, no worries. Updates are updates. Things need to happen, so life goes on. And yeah, it's going to be a first time in a while that we've done the second one for the week in the last couple months, I think. Well, maybe not a couple months, but get back
was
to
it the beat goes on. Was it Sonny and Cher?
Yep, I think so.
I think that's it. Yeah. Apropos.
Well, let's go ahead and dive into this for getting situated here. Dive into this episode and see where we kind of go with it. We precasted on this a little bit, and again, for those of you who are listening and you hear some popping, which is really annoying, my windscreen and my microphone broke. So I'll try to not enunciate my P's as hard as I normally do. So, as we know, midterm elections are coming up on the 6th, the next week here domestically in the United States. So we'll have plenty to talk about next week after the 6th. So
yeah, you don't say.
Yeah, we'll have some more to surmise about. And of course,
somebody's gonna be crying.
Somebody will be.
There's gonna be hurt feelings.
Yeah, there will be. For those of you who can still register, please find out where you can do that and register to vote. I don't care how you vote, just get out and do it. And for those for those of you who can't anymore, I guess you're shit out of luck. And for those of you who have mail-in ballots, get it done. Namely, talking to myself. I need to do that. It'll be a this weekend project. So,
I'm doing it the old-fashioned way. I'm showing up and.
Ugh, what year is it?
Yeah, I don't know why it's been a thing for me. I've done it except for when I was in Bethesda, obviously. But, yeah. Anyway, waiting on poems, but.
True. Well.
It's very different.
Our topic of conversation tonight is not necessarily about the midterm elections, but maybe it's a bit of a byproduct of what is happening leading up to the midterm elections. And what we do know is that let me preface this before we dive into this.
You know what? Everyone loves a preface.
Thing. Everyone does.
You go so ahead and preface this.
I like to listen to pretty much the spectrum of political ideology on podcasts, because it gives me some time to get the pulse of what each sort of far-reaching side has on their agenda and the pulse of sort of the rhetoric and ideology of the far left and the far right. I don't venture...
Yes, I was going to say, you got to get to the part where irony enters in for you being of German heritage, listening to far-right podcasts.
Yeah, well, what I don't do is I don't entertain... the white supremacist far right. It's really more of the
David Duke?
No. I draw the line there. It's really more of the libertarian.
Richard Spencer.
No. The libertarian. I kind of stop at the Daniel Horowitz spectrum of far right, and because I do think that he's not necessarily very. He's fairly intelligent. I think he loses me with the God thing, and he loses me with a lot of this biblical prophecy that whatever it crafts his idea, but I think he's can make a fairly intelligent argument based on his perception of stolen sovereignty in terms of how the judiciary sort of controls.
He's lucid at least.
He's fairly lucid. I have to chuckle because he gets super fired up, but either way, he's good to spur some thoughts, gets the juices flowing in the old brain. So, well, he had a podcast today on, really it was more or less about the 14th Amendment And we've
a collection of ravings. You told me he went on for 80 minutes.
He did go on for
the same issue.
80 minutes. Yep.
My God.
Well, but man. he did a fairly good job of setting the preface for getting to the point in 2018.
We had plenty of time.
Yeah, I mean he does some raving. So anyway, what we do know today is
80
that
minutes worth.
What you've seen leading up to the midterm elections is this new ad that's been aired nationally, that's been endorsed by President Trump, that really gets to a visceral, emotional, almost fear-mongering level against specifically illegal immigrants. And it's an ad that has a, I don't know if he's Central American at a minimum, who had killed two cops, and he really obviously didn't have any remorse in this laughing about it. And the ad basically says, look, this is who we're letting into our country. Do you really want these people here? And this is also in light of the caravan moving its way through Mexico. And
not to be contrarian, but more, and not even devil's advocate, but I kind of felt there was a different shade to the ad, not necessarily making it non-racist, because I'm not going to play into that. I'm not even going to grace that argument with a significant reply, okay? Mm-hmm. But in terms of what the ad was getting at, I think there was also a shade of, hey, this is why we're sending 5,000 troops to the border. This is why we're doing what we're doing. I took it as more of a subliminal explanation of sorts than a subliminal, hey, this is why we don't. I mean, I know that element was there of this is who we're not wanting to let into the country, but I think there was also, this administration has been proactive, whether the media has wanted to report on it or not.
Sure. I mean, at a minimum, it kind of fires up the base. Not that the base would ever have any problem with sending 5,000 to 15,000 troops to the border, but...
Correct. In mind real quick, okay? And I know I'm being rude and cutting you off, but I want you to think about this. We talked about this before, that the media can't have it both ways here when it comes to President Trump. And I would remind them, regardless of how they think he's acting, he is still the president, but whether they like it or not. But at the same time, they've played both sides against the middle here, and it's not working in the sense that they've said, okay, the president is full of bluster, he's saying things he can't do, or he's lying. I think CNN has compiled several thousand times that he's allegedly tweeted or said falsehoods. I don't know. I haven't reviewed it. Okay. So that's neither here nor there. The other side, though, is that now that he's doing X, Y, and Z, and it's not just begun in campaign season, okay? This is two Supreme Court justices in. I'm sorry if that's too soon for some folks. The tax cuts, whether you agree with them or not, are irrelevant. So, now he's the deregulations, et cetera. Oh, now he's a box checker. And I'm going, okay, well, what the hell do you want in a politician then? And which is he? You've said he's a do-nothing, ranting and raving all the time and having fights in his White House and does nothing. Like Politico had an article saying he has 9 hours scheduled a day for, quote, executive time in a leaked schedule. Well, so which is it?
Yeah. Well, either way, I think that, I mean, whether he has all that executive time or not, I mean, I think it's hard to argue that he hasn't made some serious changes in the United States.
But you see that point.
I do.
Both a do-nothing ranter and raver and a box checker.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are politicians? Are box checkers. I mean, that's, you go through your laundry list of things
if
you promised.
If you're lucky, they are.
Yeah, if you're lucky. Well, and I think I'm glad that you brought up the point of, you know, this is maybe just a little bit of the push he needs to get the support to send troops to the border, whether he needs support or not, but just a justification to do it. Now, here's where the side of the debate, or the way I kind of frame and look at this debate that we're having on immigration. Now, and I'll make some caveats as we walk through this, but let me just frame where I believe we are intellectually with this debate. There are some things, and especially immigration, things like, you know, we'll use that for example. It's not as important and black and white to people as something like maybe abortion is or gay rights. But, well, you can hear my family in the background. The The debate right now is three different ways. The first is that it is very visceral. It's incredibly emotional, and that happens because of things specifically like the ads that the president's running. And it's very there really is no intellectual thought. It is just, oh my gosh, they're murderers, they're rapists, you know, the whole they're not bringing their best. That just resonates very viscerally, I'm not going to say it, emotionally, and that's as far as the debate goes.
Why is the maid still at the office?
What's that?
Why is the maid still at the office? You didn't have sense enough to kick her out first?
No, she's just got back from work. So we have opposite work schedules today. I'm home early, and she
I wasn't
is...
calling your wife the maid. You missed the joke.
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
You see?
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Anyway, driving on.
I was calling you Ben Affleck.
Oh, I see. I see what you're doing. Yeah, I didn't hear that part, so thanks for clarifying.
Ben Affleck did get his toupee ripped off in a bar fight in New Orleans, so that hasn't happened to you yet. So you haven't gone full Ben Affleck.
That's true. I hope not. I hope not. I'll take his bankroll though.
You have detuped.
So let's get back. The first part of the debate's that very visceral, emotional, unintellectual part of the debate. The second is undoubtedly, and I don't statistically can't subscribe anything to this, but it is a very it is a racist overtone, or if not just overtly racist, that we don't want people that don't look like us in our country. I can't.
Is that what the ad says?
No, the ad doesn't say that. But what I'm saying is that feeds that part of the debate. And that is a very unintellectual, it's a very dumb, lazy debate in terms of immigration. We can think of like Gangs of New York.
I think it's equally lazy, though, to immediately revert to labeling it that. And I know we're a current events magazine, so we're parroting what the mainstream media is talking about. That's what we do.
But think about it this way, though. I'm saying if there's three parts...
Everything can't be racist. Yeah.
There are certainly parts of the debate that are racist, and that's what I'm saying. It's the visceral, emotional, we just can't have these type of people in our country.
Let's introduce something beyond the ad, then, because the ad alone is not enough for me to say yes.
And that's what I'm getting to. It's the third part of the debate.
My apologies.
Yes, no worries. So there is the racial overtone, which will just be there.
Pox upon me.
And then the third part is actually the intellectual debate behind immigration itself. And this is something that we haven't talked about, and I'm hoping to open up here. So the one thing about, and sadly about the real intellectual part of this, is that it's just kind of boring to the average consumer. Consumer loosely being the people of the United States. So what we'll lay out is not the sexy ad that we saw, the national ad, that sort of fear-mongering ad that gets people riled up. But it's far more intellectual, and it's far more educational to approach it this way. And so this is beyond the ad, and sadly we play to the psychological malleability of the American people, and we're presenting a real if you've ever seen the movie Idiocracy, it's like the Idiocracy version of immigration, but there's a really good debate behind it. And that's what I appreciated in his episode today, regardless of maybe it was hard to disagree with him, but it was also much easier to explore the areas of maybe where we are ethically and possibly morally obligated, and maybe not obligated, than just having this clash and this barricade of just unintellectual, well, you know, they're murderers and they're rapists and this and that, and okay, this sort of...
Right.
Okay.
Here's my fear from an administrative perspective, okay, on what the Republicans, for example, since that's really what we're getting at here, what they would come up with next, because it may have seemed like a good idea at the time, the female prosecutor or attorney at the hearings for Kavanaugh regarding Dr. Blasey Ford, it turned out to be a disaster, okay?
Yes.
I think what they're going to come up with here, I mean, I can... a Tommy Lahren type figure, you know, in some sort of seductress outfit, eating a juicy Carl's Jr. burger to advocate, you know, for their policies. I mean, I really fear what the fix would be.
Yeah, well, And I guess maybe on this episode, I'm less trying to find the fix, but actually the whole point, the fix would be to have the conversation right now, right here, and talk about have some intellectual honesty about the situation, to which I will then launch into this part of it. So where the real question with Donald Trump over this last week on immigration was the comment that he made on Axios, that he said, they're telling me now that I really can just do this, meaning stop birthright citizenship through an executive order. And all of a sudden this set off fireworks by saying, you know, Paul Ryan came out and he said, nope, that's not possible. And of course, other intellectual or scholars and the likes.
Okay, even if Paul Ryan, if Speaker Ryan is correct, it's like, shut the hell up. You come out from under that rock now.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of funny.
Go back to doing nothing until January.
Exactly. So let's kind of break down where we're at, where we have been and where we are at today, and in terms of immigration and how we should maybe be reframing this argument to be more honest and intellectual about it. So when in the United States, just post Revolutionary War, we were drafting what was the Constitution, and which was actually, there was the Articles of Confederation that weren't working, and so we the Founding Fathers are drafting the Constitution, and prior to the Constitution, we had the Declaration of Independence, which essentially gave us three rights: what, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And essentially, there was sort of embedded fourth right in there that essentially said that you are the governing body, the people are the governing body, essentially, right? And at the time, there really wasn't a lot of immigration that was happening to the United States. This was post-Revolutionary War. Globalism really looked different then. I think maybe the big push then was the East India Trading Company, and it really was just goods that were being pushed, not necessarily people. So the next best... So we're creating this democracy, and the next best or the best thing at the time in terms of immigration and citizenship was that of Commonwealth law in Britain. And essentially what that said is, it said, if you are born on British soil, you are the soil takes you up, you're a subject to the king. And
blood, soil,
and anywhere else you go, you are essentially have an allegiance to the king and you are subject to the king. There was really no expatriation. That was treason, essentially, to the king and punishable by
death.
Real quick. Yeah.
Just folks, especially abroad, the reason this came up beyond this being something we wanted to talk about in general is because of the hashtag response to this saying the 14th Amendment. Well, mm-hmm. The reason that's relevant, ...
Yes. So this at the time was sort of the best thing we had. So the United States, essentially, if you were born in the United States, there was real no policy. There wasn't a policy. The one thing that changed, and I'll get to the 14th Amendment slowly here, what changed over time is that the United States said that you had to have an allegiance, a sworn allegiance to the United States. You could not have an allegiance to anything else. That was sort of a necessity for citizenship to the United States. Well,
it's also a slight to King Edward.
Exactly. This pissed off Great Britain, and Great Britain came to the United States and said, "Screw you, dude! Like, you're basically forcing these Brits to give up citizenship." And the United States said, "Yeah, well, that's the way it works. You come here, we consent to have you in our country, and you have to swear allegiance to our country." And as a whole, the governing body decides whether or not that be the people, if we want you in or not. Well, let's just keep fast forwarding, and on comes the 14th Amendment. Now, I will just read briefly, not to bore too many people, because the second section of the 14th Amendment has to do with representation. The third section of that has to do, again, with like the state versus the federal government, essentially, and having to do with voting 2/3 of the House. And the fourth section has to do with public debt. But it's the first section that's fairly interesting. And that says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state. Yep, exactly.
Why did they pass this amendment?
Exactly. So, at the time, this was, and I'm sure this is still argued to this day, but the reason to pass the 14th Amendment post-Civil War was a path for African Americans at the time, a path to citizenship. It was to allow them, as they were obviously slaves for the centuries before, a way, as it says, born or naturalized in the United States. So that key, all persons born or naturalized, meaning going through the naturalized immigration process in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof.
Which we grandfathered in slaves, obviously, because we'll cast aside the Dr. Carsons of the world who say blacks had, or slaves had dreams for their children as well and were immigrants. It's like, come on, Ben. But we're throwing that aside, but what we're getting at is they didn't really have a choice about whether they immigrated or not.
Exactly.
So, hence the language of naturalization there. It made sense.
Yeah. So, now here's where the sort of murky, so this is where it becomes interesting in the Constitution, where some people interpret it literally, and other people interpret it a different way, and some people think it's a living document. Now, how would you interpret that? All persons born. So, or naturalized. So, what does that mean? And there had been several, there's been some Supreme Court cases hereafter. I think the one is Wong Kim Ark that basically said that they presented the case that, well, their child was born here and they were on some sort of visa, whether it was LPC or a migrant worker. They said this person's born here, therefore they are, if they're born by the Constitution, then that they're a citizen. So this obviously was then up for debate. Okay, are we still following common law? Or is it true that because are you, as being born on the soil to non-naturalized parents, are you going to be a citizen of the United States? And there is a train of thought that really says, no, we're not. Naturalized a mother's, and of course it was a father's, but now a mother citizenship, if that be it to the United States of America, does automatically translate down to become a citizen for that child to be a citizen of the United States. But that doesn't extend from like a mother to a grandkid. It's just within sort of the first generation lineage. So this now becomes, so what we can be very clear about, well, it's, I don't know, it's kind of interesting. This is where the debate, I think, for me, is far more intellectual. And
see, the trick would be if the Republicans could just figure out a way to address this a few weeks before they become an actual birth mother, then they could say, oh, wait, it's not a child.
Yes.
Stop them now.
Yeah, and it's, so I'll read.
It's a fetus, according to their opponents.
Yeah, so I'll just read briefly, because the first major case here was the Wong Kim Ark case in 1898. And this was a Supreme Court case in which the court ruled 6-2 that a child born in the United States of parents of Chinese nationality who at the time had a permanent domicile and resident in the United States and were carrying on business there but not as employees of the Chinese government automatically became a U.S. citizen. This decision established an important precedent in the interpretation of the Citizen Clause and of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. So,
we also extended a similar doctrine towards Cuban refugees and also the states of Louisiana and Mississippi during the decline and fall of South Vietnam and Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City. They opened their doors up to Vietnamese refugees.
Exactly.
Using the same clause.
Exactly. So, this is this case in 1898 has sort of set the precedent at the time and now for this idea of soil. So it's almost like commonwealth law. Now, this is what makes our democracy so interesting in terms of then where do we go if that's sort of the precedent. There's obviously been other court cases at this time, but who does this extend to? I mean, is this, what do they call it, birthright tourism? So if you get here on a visa, you're 8 months pregnant, have a kid, that kid's automatically a U.S. citizen.
The same concept as anchor babies.
Anchor babies, and that's the case of sort of the caravan effect, I will call it, where you've got illegal, or I should say, individuals who do not have the consent of the people of the United States and or of in terms of the law to enter the United States to have a child and have that child become a citizen. And now it doesn't naturalize the parents off the bat, but it certainly is a leg up for the child. And that then becomes part of the argument, and an argument that I am willing to debate in terms of our immigration policy today in the United States.
Well, so what is your position? I'm dying now to know. I actually don't know this part.
Yeah, it is interesting, okay? So
you are interesting, Nate.
Well, thank you. It leads me to a bit of cognitive dissonance, right? And this is where the original visceral reactions that I have to immigration without any proper thought put into it, it lends to a bit of cognitive dissonance, right? So what I don't like is the sort of anti-immigration platform that certainly lends itself to more of the fear-mongering that somehow people coming into this country is not good for this country. I prefaced this in our precast where I said, listen, as long as you're a good person, this is a land of opportunity. This is the greatest nation in the world. And that I don't care what nationality, what background you have, if you're a good person, I consent to you coming to the United States and getting naturalized. It doesn't matter.
Remember with that, folks, before you get too down on President Trump, the Prime Minister of Italy recently was quoted by the media over there saying that he would be okay with shutting down these little migrant shops by 9 p.m. because there's a bunch of rabble-rousers there.
Yeah. Italy and Hungary.
We're not dealing with that problem.
Italy and Hungary is rather interesting. But what it does for me is it reframes. So my visceral reaction to that is like, I think making a streamlined naturalized process, I think that individuals who are coming from Central American countries that are just horrific gang ridden countries, you know, whether that is a swift,
tap into their social security system and find out,
well, it's streamlined. To me, man, it's like,
how are you going to find out?
Okay. I mean, this is where we start talking about all sorts of things without really, and we might kind of.
Okay, go ahead. We'll forget. Let's say you've got an apt screening system in place.
Yeah.
We'll stipulate that. Go
and,
ahead.
And again, that means that these people, instead of having to come into the country illegally, really go through the asylum or refugee process. Again, we're talking about like what, a couple thousand people. We're not talking about Ellis Isle exodus from Europe into America. That's not the case, and that's what it seems to be made out to be. Is there fanfare around this caravan? Absolutely. But are there a legitimate amount of people there that are seeking asylum or would like to seek asylum? I think so. And I think really looking at it with a humanistic type of, through the humanist lens, I think is the appropriate way to look at this. And fear mongering it is just, it's, to me, it doesn't make, it grosses me out. And quite frankly, what it does is that the sort of fear mongering around it is honest as it is, pushes back the equally unintellectual argument on the left, and you sort of have this this fight that happens, and these barricades that are put up, and no debate can actually be had. Whereas if we preface it this way, in terms of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, by saying, okay, what does born mean? Well, if Wong Kim Ark says that it does mean this, where do we go from here? If it says that if you are born here, and you have domicile in the United States, you're conducting business in some way, and you have a child that's born in American soil, that individual has all rights as a U.S. citizen. Where do we go from there then? Let's have the debate from there and not about skin color and who, you know, why, in terms of our dear President Donald Trump asking why we don't have more Scandinavian immigrants and calling other countries shithole countries. I mean, that happened. You cannot deny that didn't happen, but it doesn't.
No, it happened. I took the Scandinavian thing to be more an economic argument. Okay.
Whatever it is.
The European wave is clearly going to have more wealth. I'm sorry if that offends anyone.
It is. But it's sort of everything else he says around it as well.
pattern is disconcerting.
Yeah, it's everything that's said around it. If he had honestly said that, but then he didn't follow it up with shithole countries. I mean, we kind of get what you're going at. But if you had just said, it's just how you frame it. But anyway,
well, we don't have the audio of him saying that, do we?
Oh yeah.
I thought it was alleged that he said that.
Oh no, no, he said that.
Which it doesn't surprise me.
Oh no. Well, I don't know if we have the audio about shithole countries, but we certainly have the audio. Well, whatever. The point being, it's not out of the realm of possibility that the president of the United States said that. So getting back to the immigration,
After Carly Farina, which was very early on, I'm like, is a wow, but nothing comes of it.
Yeah, anything is possible. So, again, this is the other part of the sort of intellectual debate surrounding this. So, the Supreme Court essentially set precedent by interpreting the Constitution as letting someone who is born with non-U.S. citizen parents to become a citizen of the United States. So I was trying to think, well, it seems fairly cut and dry to me, and I don't know why you should be so pissed about it. I mean, so the Supreme Court interpreted it this way. And the real pulse that I get from from those people who disagree with this, and the intellectual way to put this, is that it really is, how do I say this? That there's a problem with the overreaching judiciary that we have today that seems to be setting the law, and not really, in this case of Wong, Wong Kim Ark, that they've sort of set up or stepped in and overreached the boundaries of which and how that judiciary should act. And that would be something that they call stolen sovereignty, that the judiciary is not, they're not appointed, or they're appointed rather, they're not elected by any, by necessarily the consent of the people. And it just creates an interesting environment where the judiciary can start to move in and essentially interpret the Constitution this way, or do things like the travel ban, or deeming the travel ban unconstitutional, et cetera. Which,
again, it brings to mind, combine everything socially you've brought up with the fact that 2,100 National Guardsmen, 5,000 active duty, president saying nobody's getting in as is, we're going to have order here, or there's going to be a radical military response. You throw all these things together, and this situation, just from a macro perspective, all around stinks to me.
Oh, dude. I mean, we talked about this, and I said, who do you think, okay, what military unit were you ever in that was like all white dudes? No, man. It was a mix of everybody. You imagine sending down...
Especially when I was with the Marines.
Yeah. You imagine sending down 15,000 troops. Like, there's a good percentage of those dudes who have family and have ties in Central America that speak...
There's also, it's a weird amount of conservatism, though, dude. Even with the Hispanic Marines I was with, it's different. They're not... It's the military. There's a strange undercurrent of that regardless.
Well, and there's some truth to that. I mean, I don't know someone brought up the point. I mean, in terms of a lot of these families that came to the United States, I mean, they did go through the naturalized, the process to gain citizenship. I mean, my brother-in-law is a perfect example of his family and his mother who just recently got naturalized. So and it was an awesome process. I mean, what's that?
From where?
Honduras.
Okay, I was going to say, if it was your folks in New Zealand, I was concerned they didn't bring anything from Australia that could kill us, would they?
No. So my cousin from New Zealand is a perfect example of sort of that birthright,
of a
right?
New Zealander.
So he holds a Kiwi or New Zealand passport and a American passport. And great, he was his mother's Kiwi, his dad's American, and he was born in America. And he has rights to American citizenship and Kiwi citizenship. So then I've got, of course, a brother-in-law whose parents got naturalized, or his mother got naturalized here from Honduras. So there is a process to go through, and that is what they call the consent by the people to go through the process of being an LPC and then having naturalization. So in terms of the conservative...
Just you think about that, though.
No, when people talk about the conservative undertones with maybe Hispanic troops in the military. There is an element to that. I don't deny it, because there a lot of their families and themselves went through that arduous process of naturalization. And I mean,
someone we've interviewed four times on a podcast and now in person extensively, Sheriff Estrada has been very stringent in his own enforcement and cooperation with the there's a federal detention center there in Nogales, Arizona. It's considered kind of a ground zero, if you will. I mean, it may become a hotspot here. And he's one example, okay. That's a small sample size, sure. But it's a very long-lasting one in a 70-plus percent Hispanic county on the Arizona-Mexico border. And he's been the sheriff, I believe, three decades, some odd years. Yeah. So it is one example, but it's a powerful one.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's maybe not a massive data pool, but it certainly is long anecdotal experience. I mean...
And right, and it is what Van Jones of CNN himself even called the ground zero of the whole issue when he was there. So, I mean, it's a significant example in the sense that, and again, it's anecdotal, the service I had with Hispanic Marines, but I don't think they're going to see it as we're being ordered to move in against, I don't think it's going to come to that, first of all, but I don't think it's going to be a, hey, we're moving against Latino refugees, Hispanic refugees. Okay, I don't think that's the way it's going to be framed. It's going to be framed as this is a national security issue. We're going to do this orderly, so we're going to keep these people hemmed in type deal. I mean, I'm hoping that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah, I would be curious to see the operations order for this, just to see what the...
God for James Mattis is all I can say.
Yeah, I mean, I would be curious to see what the commander's intent for this mission is. And obviously I think that there's been enough already said that there's no engagement. There's no rule of engagements. I think they're merely there for more of a show of force.
I'm going to say that this is going to be something that's trumpeted through this, no pun intended, through the sixth. And then it dies. That is going to slowly but surely, there's going to be an exit strategy sought. Because I am leaning more towards the insider thought, the insider track, that he's going to, with or without a Democratic House, have a few more, shall we say, if not downright liberal, slightly left of center ideas after midterms.
It'll be interesting.
That he can't pull off right now. That's my feeling. I could be completely wrong. I'm not saying his rhetoric's going to stay good, or if you don't feel it improved at all, whatever. I don't think that's even a part of his story. I think there's things, for instance, the push to medically deschedule marijuana nationally or legalize it, not deschedule it, but it'd be reduced from Schedule 1, which states there's no medicinal purpose, and it would leave recreational to the states. I could honestly see that happening, even if the Republicans did somehow keep the House, because it becomes a fiscal issue and it becomes a states' rights issue, if framed correctly.
Hey, man, so, I would be, if we can put the pulse out there and figure out if that's something coming down the pike, I would put that as priority above a lot of things.
One of the closest representatives to him in the House stated he's had that conversation a number of times with his staff and with the president himself. And recently, this was in the last 2 weeks, gave an interview stating again that he's got that assurance. He said, hey, you know, this would be a real first if they just totally dropped it. And what reason would they have to have such discussions, hush-hush, pre-midterms, if it wasn't something that was at least within the realm of possibility? That's what I'm hoping for. This becomes nothing more than fanfare, a show of force. Yes, things are corralled as far as this is done right, legally. These individuals are taken care of to the best of our ability. That we've been generous and we'll be more generous as a people as we are able, to my view.
Yeah, I think that's... The good Catholic way to look at it too, right?
Well, it is, from the sense that, okay, I hearken back to the Frank Capra classic, It's a Wonderful Life, when the protagonist, Mr. Potter, said, look, well, then you foreclose on these people if they can't pay their rent. And the actual building guy in the building loans business, their partnership, said, look, I can't do that. These people have children. And Mr. Potter says, well, these aren't my children.
Yeah.
Well, they're not my children. You know, that... certainly, to me, is, yes, a non-Christian attitude. It would be very un-Catholic to feel that way. But also, it would, to me, be un-American to express such sentiment. I think it's the height, or amongst the heights, of irony for anyone to say and really mean, and back up, no, it doesn't matter what's going on in any of these situations. None of these people are getting in.
Yeah.
None of them are going should have the opportunity. None of these people are worthy of pursuing the American dream. None of them. Nobody's coming in. Let's think about that before we, and really look at the American flag, knowing how it was made. We all came here from somewhere else, regardless of the melanin count in our skin. How dare any of us say arbitrarily, feel that have the temerity to arbitrarily say that no matter what, there's no aid forthcoming for even the noblest of creatures? That's an outrage.
It is. I truly agree with you. Well, my friend, we are at 40 minutes. I have to work early, and I want to leave it on that note because I think you said it best, and I think you said the one thing that I said at the beginning is my visceral reaction when I think about this, and you said it best right there at the end of the podcast.
Well,
so
I mean, it's really, you and I, again, we want the same ends here. We have a little different means here in that I don't think that unless there's an attack made at the border, the troops needed to respond that way. I do want it done in a fiscally prudent manner. And I would like there to be some form of vetting, but that's something we could iron out.
This will be a good policy debate in the future.
Right. I was more hitting at the Richard Spencers of the world and to some degree the Tommy Lahrens of the world that, come on, to say, I get it, the president's making a point that's not going to stick and he knows it, of nobody's getting in, okay? But for you to parrot that talking point, not as someone who's trolling, as whether they know it or not, the president is, hate to break it to y'all,
mm-hmm.
okay? You are parroting, not... You know what I mean, Richard Spencer and company.
Yeah.
You are parroting this line because you really believe this dog shit.
Exactly.
So, with that from you folks, I know you're definitely getting tired and closing of hearing me speak. So, with that, au revoir.
We'll see you, my friend.